You knew they wouldn't be enough. What do you mean? She asked, pleased at how normal her voice sounded. I haven't seen you at all since Chords. You missed the AR game yesterday, and when I went by your apartment to check on you, no one was there. Avery shot her a look. Is everything okay? Eris didn't want to talk about any of this. It was too raw and tender, and besides, as soon as anyone knew the truth, it would all be irrevocably real. But she'd already thought of the perfect excuse. My parents decided to renovate our apartment. Again. You know how they are. She gave an exaggerated eye roll. We're at the Nuage for a while. I'm sorry about yesterday, she added. I'm just glad everything is okay. I mean, not that I was too worried. I figured you were off doing something fabulous. Like that time you came back a week late from summer break because you and your mom took the long way home from Myanmar, Avery teased. Eris felt a pang at the memory. She and her mom had so much fun on that vacation, traipsing around Asia wearing brightly printed dresses without a care in the world. Anyway, I'm jealous you're at the Nuage, Avery was saying. We should start sleeping over at your place so we can wear those fluffy robes and order ricotta blueberry pancakes in the morning. Absolutely, Eris agreed, with false brightness. They stepped out of the doors and onto the lawn in front of school, where manicured green grass sloped down toward Madison Avenue. A chorus of voices instantly surrounded them, Ming and Risha and Lita all debating how to spend the afternoon, exchanging gossip and stories from the day. Eris just stood there and let it wash over her. When the group decided on yoga and smoothies at Altitude Club, she let herself be swept along, nodding and smiling with the rest of them. She needed this time with Avery and her friends, doing what they always did. She needed to pretend that everything was normal, that her life wasn't crashing down around her, that she was still Eris Dodd Radson. As they walked past the tech net, the boundary surrounding campus that caused all contacts, tablets, and other non-academic hardware to go dark, Eris immediately pulled up her inbox. It was delusional, she knew, but she kept hoping for something from her dad. She got that he needed space, but still, was this really how it would be from now on? What if they never spoke again? The top message in her inbox made her cringe. It was from the Altitude Club's member services desk, a courtesy notification that her membership had been discontinued. Eris was overwhelmed by a sudden flush of anger. Her mom had done this. She'd been the one to insist they join Altitude in the first place, the one who managed all their memberships and social appointments and everything else that was fun or luxurious in their lives. Of course, Eris knew her mom didn't want to spend any of Everett's money anymore. That was the whole point of moving. But what harm would it really do if Eris stayed on his Altitude membership? Then she thought of what her mom had said, about letting her dad set the tone of their relationship moving forward, and she realized that might be the reason Caroline didn't want Eris at Altitude, so that she wouldn't risk running into Everett there. This is really happening, she thought, a little stunned, though of course she had known it was coming. Her life was falling apart before her eyes, piece by gilded piece. She opened her mouth to say something, but no sound came out. And what could she tell her friends anyway? Sorry, guys, I can't come to Altitude because I'm too poor. Everyone piled on the elevator to 9:30, shuffling a helpless Aaron along with them. She kept nodding, not registering what anyone was saying. Her mind whirred with excuses to extricate herself, each wilder and more frantic than the last. That she had to go intern at her dad's office again. That Cord had booty-called her. That her parents had grounded her after Saturday's party and put a location monitor on her contacts so they would know her every movement. They started down the oak-shaded cobblestone lane that led to the Altitude entrance. Eris felt dizzy, her breath coming in abbreviated gasps. She couldn't walk in. Couldn't face the pity on Jeffrey's face as he politely but firmly told her she wasn't allowed inside. The knowing glances and hushed whispers her friends would exchange once they realized the truth. She felt sick at the prospect. But it was as if her feet were moving of their own accord, drawing her ever closer to her own destruction, a weak, mechanical smile pasted on her face. She watched as Risha and Lita headed into the elevator and up to the yoga level. Ming hung back, waiting for Avery, who was looking at Eris, a questioning expression on her face.
"I don't feel well," Eris blurted out. "I think I'm gonna head home."
"Are you sure?" Avery frowned. Ming let out a single bitter laugh.
"Don't worry, Aves. She's totally just going for an afternoon workout session of her own, at Chords."
Eris flinched at that. Normally she didn't let Ming's little barbs get to her, but with everything else that was happening, it was hard to maintain her calm. And why was Ming calling Avery Aves anyway? Everyone knew that was Atlas's nickname for her.
"That was kind of rude of you," Eris said, trying not to sound defensive. "I really don't feel great."
"Chill out, Eris. It was just a joke." Ming narrowed her eyes.
"You do look pretty terrible, though, come to think of it."
"Oh my God, leave me alone!" Eris snapped, all niceties gone. Ming looked to Avery as if expecting her to argue, but Avery just sighed.
"I'll meet you upstairs," she said, not looking at Ming, digging through her bright red hobo bag.
Ming tossed her head angrily and marched into the elevator.
"Here we go!"
Avery triumphantly produced a silver Medi wand. Eris recoiled.
"It's fine, really," she insisted.
But Avery was already waving the wand over Eris's head and torso, her wrist flicking as if it were a toy. After a moment, the wand beeped, having quickly detected and summarized all Eris's vital signs, and the bulb at the end of it lit up a bright telltale green, the sign of perfect health.
"Look, you're clearly just tired."
Avery sounded infuriatingly calm.
"Why don't you come sit by the pool instead? Maybe get a facial while we're at yoga? Then you can still meet us for smoothies afterward."
"No thanks," Eris repeated, her voice strained.
"You didn't need to snap at Ming,"
Avery admonished gently.
"I know her joke was lame, but I don't think she meant any harm by it."
Eris shook her head, overwhelmed by a sudden bitter anger. Avery didn't get it. She was the same as she'd always been, still sailing effortlessly above everyone else's sordid little problems up there in her 1,000th-floor palace, while Eris had lost everything. In their whole lifetime of friendship, Eris had never truly resented Avery until this moment.
"You know, I really don't feel well," she repeated, overemphasizing each word. "I'm going home."
She saw Jeffrey meet her eyes knowingly and felt like she might scream.
"Okay, call me later?"
Avery asked, worried, but she didn't press any further. Eris turned back out of the entryway, contemplating the long, dismal trip to 103. She hadn't made it halfway down the block before everything was blurry. She wiped angrily at the tears, but they were coming faster now, in ugly, jagged sobs, and the only thing she could do was turn blindly into a side alley and try to pull herself together. Who was she anymore, anyway? She couldn't be Eris Dodd. The name didn't fit her any better than the stuffy, cramped apartment down on 103. Eris crossed her arms over her chest, hugging herself tight, and took a few deep breaths to regain control. At least this alley was hidden enough from the main street that no other Altitude members had seen her breakdown.
"I wouldn't have guessed you're the type to sit around crying."
Eris looked up to see Mariel in front of her, hand on hip, wearing jeans and a tight-fitting tank top.
"What, are you stalking me or something?"
"Shocking, I know, but the world doesn't revolve around you." Mariel gestured at the door behind Eris. "You're blocking the service entrance." Eris stepped aside, racking her brain for a witty comeback, but none came.
"Thanks," Mariel walked past. "If you're looking for a better place to cry about your club membership, there's a nice closet in here." You have no idea what I'm going through, okay? Eris shot back. You don't know what it's like to have your family, your entire world, just fall apart. Mariel stood in the doorway, her eyes locked on Eris, who shifted uncomfortably under the weight of her gaze. After a moment, Mariel shook her head. You'd be surprised, she said. The door shut automatically behind her. 4 hours later, Eris had stayed up tower as long as she could. She'd roamed through her favorite boutiques, pretending to consider dresses and bags she could no longer pay for. It felt fantastic at first, the rush of salesgirls locating designs they had pulled for her, the reassuring clack of their heels on the floor, the cold glasses of orange water they handed to her while she reviewed the scans of each design on her 3D body projection. Yeah, it all felt fantastic, until they started to get serious about placing orders, and Eris had to mutter an excuse and flee the store. She'd gone to Hyacinth, her favorite organic grocery shop, to try the free samples they put out at dinner time. She'd even gone to the download storefront and ordered a hot foam latte just so she could sit in the comfy chair for a while and flip through magazines on their tablets. It felt weird, really, spending the afternoon alone with nothing but her thoughts. But by now it was late, and Eris was running out of places to go. She'd flickered Cord a couple of times, but he hadn't answered. He was probably napping or playing a Hollow game or smoking up with friends. She hadn't slept over since before his party, she realized. Less than a week. But after everything that had happened, it felt like a lifetime ago. Eris stood up with a sigh, about to head home. But the thought of the smell and the roaches and, most of all, of having to talk to her mom froze her feet in place. Before she'd consciously changed her mind, she was already turning around and on her way to Cord's. The front door swung open as Eris stepped onto his doorstep. She'd been on the approved entry list for months. Cord? She called out, venturing inside. He wasn't in the living room, though she saw a bunch of stuff that didn't look like his strewn out on the couches. Bryce was in town then. She found Cord in his bedroom, leaning back on his expensive down pillows as he read something on a tablet. Strange. She hadn't seen him read all that often before. Maybe ever. Eris, he said, seeing her there. What are you... I wanted to pay you a visit. She pulled the door shut behind her. This isn't a good time, actually. Cord's gaze was distant, not with the distracted look of being on contacts, but truly lost in thought. Eris felt a little flutter of anxiety. She wondered if her eyes were still red-rimmed from crying earlier. Screw it, she thought, and reached for the top button of her Oxford shirt. Then she walked slowly toward the bed. She carefully, sensually undid the buttons of her shirt one by one. But Cord's eyes didn't light up in appreciation the way they usually did. When the shirt was undone, revealing her pink lace bra beneath, Eris climbed onto the bed next to him. He wasn't doing anything, she thought, a little panicked, not turning out the lights or reaching up to touch her or anything. Eris, he said, but she leaned forward to cover his mouth with hers, reaching for the hem of his shirt and starting to pull it up. He allowed the kiss for a moment before resting his hands on her shoulders and pushing her gently to the side. I'm serious, he said, and there was a new edge to his voice. Not now. Eris knew that was her cue to leave, to laugh and put her shirt back on as if nothing was wrong. But she couldn't do it. Cord's rejection had shaken loose whatever tendrils of control she had left. Tears burned at the corners of her eyes. She tried furiously to will them away. The last thing she wanted was to let Cord see her cry. Can I just stay here a little? She asked, her voice small. She didn't even care about hooking up with Cord. She just wanted to snuggle under the 1,000 thread-count sheets on his ultra-foam mattress and wake up to the morning sun streaming in through his windows. Is everything okay? Do you want me to call Avery? He answered. Eris felt like she'd been slapped. She understood the subtext. Whatever you're going through, I'm not dealing with it. Cord only wanted fun, flirty, happy Eris, not any of the other Erises that came along with her. She knew they weren't officially dating, that he wasn't her boyfriend or anything, but she thought that by now Cord cared about her a little. At the very least, the way a friend would. "Do you have any feelings for me at all?" she blurted out, and winced as soon as she said the words. She'd sounded shrill and clingy. "Never mind, forget it," she stammered, but it was too late. Cord was sitting up straight, looking her in the eye. "Eris, I'm so sorry," he said, as sincere as she'd ever heard him. "I thought we were on the same page."
"We are!" she cried out, but he was shaking his head.
"I thought we were just having fun. I can't do anything serious right now." "I'm sorry," he said again, sounding regretful. "I think it's best if we end things before we do any more damage."
Eris started to reply, to tell him that she was fine keeping things casual, but something stopped her. She couldn't bear to lose what little pride she still had left. With quick, concise movements, she buttoned her top and tossed her hair.
"Sure, see you around," she added, in as normal a voice as she could manage.
"See you."
There was a note of grudging respect in Cord's tone, as if he hadn't expected her to take everything so easily. On her way out the front door, Eris realized that she would almost certainly be off the retinal scanner's admit list starting tomorrow. "Oh well," she thought, with a surprising lack of emotion. She was far less upset about the breakup, if it even counted as a breakup when you weren't really dating, than she thought she'd be. Maybe because it seemed so unimportant in light of everything she'd already lost. Lita. The next afternoon, Lita stood at the East Asian rock garden on the edge of campus. It was quiet here, and cold. Hardly anyone ever came this way. The only sounds were those of the tiny garden bot, raking the stones into a rippled pattern, and a fountain burbling cheerfully in the corner. She was waiting for Avery. They both had chemistry lab this period. They'd made sure of it when they picked classes last spring. They always scheduled their science classes together, and they always met here at the Zen Garden before the first lab session to walk over together and make sure they were partners. It had been their tradition since eighth grade. Lita paced tight circles around the garden, watching the time on her school-issued tablet, waiting as long as she dared. Her contacts didn't work within school grounds, so she couldn't reach Avery. The garden bot started to undo the swirls it had raked, replacing them with tiny squares. Real, natural sunlight, filtered from outside the tower using a system of mirrors, spilled through the skylight overhead. Lita bit her lip, frustrated. What a pointless garden. How could anyone feel zen with this stupid thing constantly raking the stones? Avery wasn't coming. Lita needed to go. But first she stepped forward and gave the bot a sudden, violent kick. It sailed in an arc through the air, landing on its back with a satisfying crunch. Its wheels spun helplessly. If Avery had been there, she would have laughed. The thought only made Lita feel more upset. She left the bot there and hurried toward the science wing. She made it to chemistry just as the three-tone chime sounded at the beginning of class, only to find that Avery was already in the second row, her long legs crossed negligently in front of her.
"Hey!" Lita hissed as she slid into the empty seat next to her friend. "I looked for you at the garden. Did you forget?"
"Oh, right. I'm sorry." Avery turned back toward the front of the room, her stylus poised on the tablet to take notes. Lita bit back a reply and tried to focus on Professor Pitkin's opening remarks. He had a PhD in materials science and had authored the National Chemistry textbook. That was the reason parents paid for Berkeley, because the teachers were leaders in their fields. The people who composed the lecture vids everyone else watched rather than the public school preceptors.
But when Leda looked at the professor, all she could think was that with his bald pate and bloodshot complexion, he resembled nothing so much as a purple, overripe fruit. Professor Plum, they would call him. She started writing a joke to Avery, then put down her stylus with a sigh. Things between her and Avery were weird. Leda wasn't sure whether it was because of Cord's party, if Avery was still upset that Leda hadn't told her the truth about this summer, or whether it was about Atlas. She'd acted a little strange during the whole AR thing, after all. Hadn't she left the game at one point? Leda wondered if Avery was upset that Leda hadn't checked with her first before asking Atlas out. It would be kind of weird for Avery if her best friend started dating her brother. But this still seemed like an overreaction. An overreaction if your friend dated your brother, sure, but not if she'd slept with him, Leda thought suddenly. The realization made her nauseated. Did Avery know about the Andes? That would certainly explain her behavior. She was pissed that Leda had lost her virginity to Atlas and didn't even tell his sister, her best friend, about it. But how exactly was Leda supposed to talk about that when Avery was always so weirdly protective of Atlas? She glanced over at Avery's profile, desperately trying to figure out what her friend was thinking. Should she apologize? She didn't want to unless Avery actually knew. And Leda had no desire to march up to Atlas and ask whether he told his sister about their hookup. The old familiar Zenperhydrin urge nipped at her, whispering that it had the answers, that it would smooth away all her insecurities. "I am enough in myself," Leda repeated silently, but the mantra didn't soothe her the way it had back at Silver Cove. Maybe Nadia could figure out what was up with Avery. The hacker had been tracking Atlas's movements over the last few days, providing transcripts of his flickers and receipts from his bit bank, although none of it was particularly helpful. It wasn't Nadia's fault. The problem was Atlas. He was too private for any of that to be much use. Avery looked up and met her gaze head-on, and Leda glanced away, annoyed that she'd been caught staring. She was uncomfortably reminded of the beginning of seventh grade, when she'd been so anxious about what everyone thought of her. Compared to Midtower, the upper floors had felt sleek and high-tech and oppressively expensive. And her classmates had done everything so fast, punchlines snapping back and forth between them in some kind of code. Leda wished she knew what they were saying, who their jokes were referencing. She had watched one group of girls in particular, blazing with confidence, led by a tall blonde almost too perfect to be real. She had wanted, desperately, to be one of them. It wasn't long before she learned some of these kids took Zenperhydrin, the anxiety pills, the same ones her mom took, as a study aid. Getting her mom's pills had been far too easy. Leda's parents were so trusting that they'd never activated the biosecurity on their new apartment's touch surfaces. That night, Leda had slipped into their bathroom while they were watching Hollows and grabbed her mom's Zenperhydrin from the medicine cabinet. She shook two of the pills into her palm and was back in the hall in a matter of seconds. The next day, before school, she took one of them. Instantly, the world had become brighter, more focused. Her brain was moving at warp speed, mining her long-term memory for facts she'd forgotten, watchful and alert for every detail of the world. She felt more confident than she'd ever been. When she walked up to Avery at lunch and asked to sit at her table, Avery had just smiled and said, "Sure." Fueled by the Zenperhydrin, Leda laughed at all the right jokes, said exactly the right thing. She knew in that moment that she was in. She took more and more of the pills over the next few years, eventually buying from a dealer named Ross so she wouldn't get caught stealing her mom's. She had tried to space them out, to take them only before exams or big parties. She didn't need them socially anymore, now that she was friends with Avery. But she loved the Leda the pills brought out. That Leda was sharper and cleverer and more insightful, able to read the nuances of a situation and manipulate it to her advantage. That Leda figured out how to get everything she wanted. Except, of course, Atlas. Alita startled to sudden attention, aware that everyone around her was standing up, chairs scraping the floor as they paired off into lab partners. She turned to Avery, but Avery had her back to Alita and was talking to Sid Pinkelstein. "Avery?" Alita said, reaching around to tap her friend on the shoulder. "We're partners, right?" "I just promised Sid," Avery apologized. Sid stood there looking a little bewildered by his good fortune. "Junior year, college applications and all. I need to really ace this," she added quickly. "I'm sorry." Wow. Avery was so desperate to avoid her that she'd rather hang out with the kid they'd always called Sid Pimpleface? "Sure," Alita said. "Risha?" She grabbed the other girl's arm and dragged her, seething, to the lab table. "Here it is." Risha pulled up the lab instructions on her tablet. Her eyes darted back and forth between Alita and Avery, who was working with Sid two tables away. But Alita had already started to mix things, throwing powders and chemicals into the bowl at random and grinding them with a pestle.
"So according to the instructions, we don't actually need magnesium," Risha said warily, lowering her goggles over her eyes.
"Too late," Alita replied.
What the hell, she thought a little wildly. With any luck, maybe she would create an explosion.
Rylan. Saturday afternoon, Rylan stepped into Cord's bedroom and pulled the door quickly shut behind her. She'd been waiting for this chance all day. Cord had been gone since she arrived this morning. Come to think of it, he hadn't been home much at all this week, though she had no idea where he went every afternoon. Maybe he was avoiding her after that weird moment on his step, she considered, then felt foolish for even thinking it. Cord Anderton had probably never made a decision based on a girl in his entire life, let alone a girl who worked for him. But even with Cord gone, Rylan didn't feel comfortable enacting her plan until Bryce left the apartment. He'd skulked around for hours, watching her clean, until 10 minutes ago when he finally left to hit the cardio, whatever that meant. She shuddered at the memory of how he'd looked at her on the way out, the way his eyes had traveled over her form and he'd wet his lips like a lizard. Small wonder Cord was so messed up, when the only real family he had left was a debauched 26-year-old who did nothing but jet from one expensive playground to another. Rylan had dealt with worse than Bryce, though. She could put up with him for a while longer. Truthfully, she owed him for being the reason she'd kept this job all week. She was starting to dread her inevitable return to the monorail snack station, with its screeching train cars and endless flow of angry customers. But her options as a 17-year-old high school dropout were kind of limited. Working at Cord's was a nice change. His apartment was cool and quiet, and she could get things done at her own pace, alone with her thoughts for once in her life. Cord paid better, too. And if her plan worked, he would be the reason she and Krissa didn't get evicted. Heart racing, Rylan knelt down to pull open the bottom drawer of Cord's dresser and grabbed three of the individually wrapped spokes, their paper thick and waxy in her hands. "Cord doesn't need these the way I do," she reminded herself. He had so many already, he'd never notice a few missing. Besides, if he ran out, he would just go see his long list of doctors and get a refill prescription. Suddenly, all she could think of was the look on Cord's face when he'd been watching those old family vids. There'd been something so earnest, almost young in his expression, his face clear of its normal skepticism and sarcasm. And here she was, stealing the drugs that he'd been prescribed right after his parents' funeral. How would her mom react if she knew what Rylan was up to right now? The door swung open. Rylan jumped, holding the spokes guiltily behind her back. Cord stood in the doorway. "Hey," he said, sounding puzzled. Rylan opened her mouth, but no words came out. She knew she was only making herself look more suspicious, standing in the middle of his room without cleaning supplies. But she wasn't sure what to say. She stared stupidly at Cord, trying to read the emotions dancing like lightning across his face. If he caught her stealing from him, she wouldn't just be fired. She could be arrested. Ryland did the only thing she could think of. She leaned in, her hands still closed tight around the drugs, and kissed him. She felt desperate and panicked, as utterly terrified as she'd felt when she followed Hyrule to an elevator shaft and looked down the impossible distance to the bottom. After an endless moment, Cord returned the kiss. But it was guarded, cautious, nothing at all like the way he'd kissed her last weekend. By the time they pulled away, Ryland had managed to stuff the spokes into her pocket. Cord was watching her, curious. His broad-shouldered presence seemed to draw the air from the room. Had he noticed? She steeled herself, ready to deny everything, to run away. "You're kind of confusing, you know, slapping me one weekend and then kissing me the next." "What can I say?" Ryland's tone was flippant, but her heart was still racing in panic. "I'm complicated." "Apparently." Cord stared at her a moment longer, then reached into his pocket for something. "I was gonna give you this, by the way." Ryland inhaled sharply. It was an Insta photo of her mom, taken in what looked like the Andertons' greenhouse. She watched, transfixed, as the moving image of her mom leaned in to smell a blooming pink amaryllis, her smile glowing. "How did you..." she whispered, fighting to hold back sudden tears. "My mom took it. She was constantly taking snaps," Cord replied. "I remembered you saying you didn't have many of your mom from before. I stumbled across this and... anyway, you should have it."
"I love it."
"She had a ton of old files. You're welcome to look through them. Who knows, there might be more of your mom." His voice was rough with some emotion she couldn't place.
"Thank you."
Ryland fell silent, touched. They both stood there, neither of them quite sure what to say next. Ryland realized she was staring at the quick rise and fall of Cord's breath, the neat row of stitches along his collar and the tanned smoothness of his chest underneath. She caught herself with a start.
"I should get going, I guess," she mumbled, and sidestepped past him.
Cord nodded, saying nothing. He just watched as she clattered down the stairs and out the door, clutching the photo with both hands.
"You're never going to believe what I got today,"
Ryland announced as she walked into the apartment.
"Arrested. A promotion. A new boyfriend."
Krissa stood at the all-purpose cooktop in their kitchen nook, fiddling with the knob to change the setting from grill to steamer. She reached into the produce drawer and pulled out several oversized broccoli, then tossed them onto the cook surface and sprayed them with honey sriracha glaze from a can. The steam curled her hair in little ringlets around her face.
"What? No!"
Ryland said, too excited to respond to the dig at Hyrule. Krissa had liked him fine before, but ever since he started dealing last year, she'd made her disapproval abundantly clear.
"Look at this!"
Ryland exclaimed, holding out the Insta photo. She hadn't been able to tear her eyes from it the whole commute home. Krissa turned, impatient, and nearly dropped the box of feta pops she was holding.
"Oh, Rye!"
She rushed over for a closer look.
"I know!"
The two of them stared at the photo for a moment, transfixed.
"She's so... happy! I'd almost forgotten how beautiful she was before..."
Krissa sniffed.
"Where did you get this?"
"Cord gave it to me." Ryland wondered, suddenly, how Cord had stumbled across it. She and Krissa had been looking for photos of their mom for a year, but most of the ones they had were pics that Rose had taken of the two of them. In the few they did have, she always looked tired or worn down. This was how Ryland remembered her, laughing and healthy, her green eyes sparkling, her face illuminated from within. Krissa had started crying. Not the quiet tears that they'd wept in the last days of their mom's illness when she was suffering in the next room and they didn't want her to hear, but huge sobs that shook her skinny shoulders. "Shh," Rylan murmured, pulling her sister into a hug. She felt Krissa's pain as if it were her own, which of course it was. It always had been, ever since their dad left when Krissa was a toddler, and Rylan's mom had started working all the time. Even then, it had been the two of them against the world.
"I just miss her so much," Krissa whispered.
"I know. Me too." The front door pushed open. Startled, both girls turned to look, but it was only Hyrule.
"Hey, hey, what's cooking?"
he asked, and paused when he saw that they were crying.
"Sorry, what happened? Did someone die?"
Rylan tried to forgive his bluntness.
"It's okay," she said, feeling Krissa bristle next to her. "I just got this today. Cord gave it to me."
She gestured to the Insta photo on the table, the moving image of her mom laughing and smelling the flower in joyful eternity.
"Oh, that's nice."
"We need to hang it."
Krissa pointed to a spot on the wall.
"Right here, in the middle of the room."
"Yes!"
Rylan nodded enthusiastically. She went over to the cabinet and rummaged through drawers until she unearthed a package of adhesive dots.
"Hyrule, can you reach?"
He shrugged and stuck the dots onto the back of the photo, then mounted it where Krissa directed, sticking it to the wall with a slap.
"I have to get some air,"
Krissa said suddenly and stepped outside. Rylan wondered if she'd started crying again.
"I have something for you, by the way,"
Rylan said to Hyrule, pulling the spokes out of her pocket. His eyes widened.
"You stole those from Anderton? Nice."
"He had so many, he'll never miss them,"
Rylan said, feeling suddenly uneasy. She hoped she was right.
"How soon can you clear them for me?"
"I'll move them as fast as I can."
Hyrule held one of the spokes up to the light and studied it from various angles, emitting a low whistle.
"We should hit one of these, though, before we unload the others."
"No!"
Rylan almost shouted. She took a breath to calm herself.
"I need that cash. I'm behind on rent."
"You're always behind on rent,"
Hyrule said easily.
"Come on, they're Cord Anderton's spokes. They have to be powerful stuff. I mean, isn't he totally messed up?"
"What, because his parents are dead?"
Hyrule flushed a sudden bright red.
"You know that's not what I meant. I'm just saying, it would be one hell of a ride. And then..."
His hand dropped lower on her waist.
"I'm serious,"
Rylan snapped, shoving him away.
"Fine, fine."
Hyrule threw up his hands, trying to laugh it off.
"You snagged them, you decide what to do with them. I'll take them to V when I make my next drop."
"Thank you," Rylan said quietly.
"Maybe we can take one of the next round."
Hyrule tucked the spokes quickly into his pocket.
Rylan frowned.
"There's not going to be a next round. I won't steal from him again."
"Why not? You said it yourself, that douchebag won't even notice."
"He's not a douchebag. He gave me that photo,"
Rylan replied, though she wasn't sure why she was defending Cord Anderton. For some reason her mind jumped to the kiss, and she flushed a little, hoping her thoughts weren't written there on her face.
"Whatever."
Hyrule made a dismissive gesture.
"What's going on with you?"
Rylan asked sharply, just as Krissa walked back in the door, her eyes red. Rylan made eye contact with her sister, then looked back at Hyrule, wondering what had set him off. Unless... Her gaze drifted to the Insta photo.
Could he be jealous? "Nothing, I'm sorry."
Hyrule passed a hand over his face, and his features settled back into their usual indifference.
"I'll give these to V tonight. Speaking of which, do you want to change?" We should probably get going.
Oh, right. They were all supposed to go to some party for one of Indigo's friends. But for the first Saturday in a year, Rylan wasn't desperate to go out and get high. She felt exhausted, and she missed her sister.
It's okay, she said. I'm kind of tired. Why don't you go without me this time?
Whatever you want, babe.
Hero gave her a quick kiss.
We'll miss you, though. See you tomorrow.
The moment the door shut behind him, Rylan turned to Krissa.
So, she said, as if it were totally normal for her to be staying in. I'm gonna put on sweatpants and set the table. Are there any good vids you've been wanting to watch?
Her sister looked at her in disbelief, then up at the Insta-photo, and it seemed to Rylan that they were both doing the same thing, trying to rewind to before Hero walked in. After a moment, Krissa broke out into a smile.
Mais oui, she said, in the terrible French accent that Rylan had missed more than she realized. Café Paris is open for business.
Eris stepped up to 2704 Bainbury Lane and opened the front door as quietly as she could. The last thing she wanted right now was for her mom to hear her coming in and try to start a conversation. Eris had barely spoken to her all week. Her feelings were still too raw and tender, like a bruise that she kept pressing on. As the door swung inward, Eris threw a hand up to cover her mouth, trying not to gag. Their apartment had that smell again, the gross, sewagey one that occasionally wafted from the upstairs neighbors. She pushed the front door all the way open, which usually helped ventilate a little, and wedged one of her shiny black stilettos to hold it in place. Then she sailed through the entire apartment, spraying her jasmine perfume, dousing the vents in it until her eyes watered. But at least now she could breathe again. Eris heard a noise coming from her mom's room and stepped a little closer, only to realize that what she heard were muffled sobs. She felt a sudden flush of guilt and shame. Her mom had been acting so optimistic all week, telling Eris about jobs she'd applied for and trying to spruce up this awful apartment in whatever little ways she could. Caroline hadn't once cried around Eris. Now here she was, clearly letting out her grief only because she didn't realize that Eris was home. Eris moved quickly past. She hated seeing her mom like this. But she wasn't ready to go in there and hug her either. She hadn't yet forgiven her for everything that had happened. It was like her dad, Everett, she reminded herself, had said. I just need more time, okay? Eris sighed and opened the refrigerator. She wasn't even hungry. It was a hollow and aimless gesture, because she wasn't sure what else to do. For the first time in years, Eris had no plans on a Saturday night. Instead, she would be here, alone, in a smelly apartment while all her friends did something fabulous that she could no longer afford. At least she'd managed to go up tower earlier today. She'd spent the afternoon shopping with Avery and the girls, not that she bought anything, but she'd been desperate to escape the lower floor claustrophobia. They'd all gone out for ice fruit afterward, and Eris had ended up spending some of her rapidly dwindling bit bank balance on a lemon freeze just so she wouldn't be the only girl without one. She'd practically had to restrain herself from licking the bright pink compostable cup when she was done. She couldn't believe she used to buy stuff like that, eat two bites, and throw the rest away without another thought. Now the rest of the girls were all headed out, to dinner at Amuse-Bouche and then the new tiki bar Painkiller. Eris had heard that the bar looked out on a simulated ocean, where the sun set repeatedly all night long, over and over every 40 minutes. In her old life, Eris would be getting dressed right now. She let herself briefly fantasize about it, planning her outfit. Her white, crocheted halter top and the flowy skirt with the slit up the side, and a big, expensive hibiscus flower in her hair, which she would have to special order from the florist, but which would be totally worth it when all the other girls saw it and wished they'd had the same idea. They'd all been shocked when she said she couldn't come tonight. "Are you sure?" Avery had begged, and Eris almost blurted out the truth right then and there. But she knew the moment she did, everything would change, and she couldn't handle that yet. None of the girls would be mean about it, of course, but they would feel awkward and uncomfortable around her, and the invitations would slowly stop coming. No one would want to make Eris feel bad by asking her to expensive dinners or yoga classes she couldn't afford. And she needed that pretense of normalcy. It was the only thing keeping her stable right now. Instead, she told everyone that her parents were forcing her to come home for family dinner. Family dinner, ha! In an attempt to be nice, the girls had insisted on walking her home to the Nuage. Eris ended up waving goodbye and getting in the elevator, then wandered the halls upstairs for 15 minutes before she dared come back down. It was getting exhausting, keeping up with her lies. She started toward her bedroom, but paused at the sound of commotion out in the hall, the voices traveling clearly through the doorway, which was still propped wide open.
I know, I'll tell her!
It sounded like Mariel. Eris glanced out, and sure enough, there was Mariel, rolling her eyes as she shut the apartment door behind her. Going out? Eris said without thinking. Mariel was wearing a tight dress with an uneven hem, red heels, and a compact chrome bag.
Staying in? Mariel answered.
Guess so. Not much to do around here, is there? Mariel raised an eyebrow.
Yeah, our parties aren't all champagne flutes and lame music.
You're going to a party? Eris wasn't sure why she was doing this, except that she didn't want to go inside and be alone again. Mariel stared at her for a moment in evident disbelief.
You want to come?
Yes, Eris breathed, sounding pathetically eager. Mariel walked over to Eris, her lips pursed. Then, in a single dramatic gesture, she ripped all the buttons from Eris's silk button-down, revealing the white camisole beneath.
What the hell?
Eris stepped back, but Mariel was laughing. For someone so brusque, her laugh was surprisingly soft, floating lazily upward like rings of halluciliter smoke. Eris found herself wanting to hear it again.
Sorry,
Mariel said cheerfully. But it's not a costume party, so you can't go as an uptight highlier bitch. Here. She pulled one of the long chain necklaces from around her neck and handed it to Eris.
That'll help.
Thanks. Eris glanced down at her outfit, jeans and sand-colored wedges and the white undershirt, which was way too low-cut to be worn as an actual top. The necklace drew attention to her cleavage in a slutty way. Whatever. It didn't matter how she looked down here. And her spirits had lifted a bit, in spite of everything, at the mention of a party.
Where are we going?
Eris trotted to catch up with Mariel, who was already moving down the hall.
Have you ever taken the monorail?
Only once, on a field trip in elementary school, but Mariel didn't need to know that. Eris wondered with some trepidation where they were headed. The monorails were commuter trains, leading only to dismal places like New Jersey or Queens. Everyone uptower just took copters instead.
Of course I have, she said, more confidently than she felt.
Welcome to Brooklyn, Mariel announced when they finally disembarked.
They started down a street lined with shops, a few stubbornly open despite the lack of foot traffic, the halogen lights out front flickering half-heartedly. Mariel pulled out her tablet and began texting, her brow furrowed. Eris said nothing. She'd never been to Brooklyn before. It used to be a fairly popular neighborhood, she knew, back before the tower was built, and cast part of the borough in perpetual shadow. The township of Brooklyn was still locked in a lawsuit with the engineering firm that had designed the tower, but no one thought they would actually win. In the meantime, people had been trickling out of the area for the past 2 decades. Eris wasn't sure who even lived here anymore.
Here we are, Mariel said, walking up a staircase that led to an old, once stately brick townhouse.
Foreclosure, property of Fuller Wealth Management, read a bright red sign taped across the front door, which had been sealed off and then crudely broken into. Eris heard music thumping behind it.
She gave a dark chuckle at the irony that she was going to a party in a house owned by Avery's dad. Avery would find it hilarious. Too bad Eris could never tell her.
Mariel gave a series of knocks at the door, which swung inward, revealing a burly guy with ink tats and a beard. His frown melted into a smile when he saw Mariel.
"Where have you been?" he asked, pulling her into a hug. "My mom keeps asking about you."
"Tell your mom we'll come by soon," Mariel promised, and stepped past him. Eris tried to follow, but the guy put an arm up, blocking her way.
30 nanos, he said firmly.
Oh. She might have 30 nanos left in her bit bank, but only just.
"She's with me, Jose,"
Mariel called over her shoulder.
"Sorry." Jose lowered his arm. "I didn't realize. Have fun."
Mariel looped an arm in Eris's and pulled her forward, toward what looked like the living room, empty of furniture but crowded with teenagers wearing cheap-looking clothes and broad smiles. Bars had been set up at both ends of the room, and there were speakers in all four corners, including floating speakers that followed the highest concentration of people. It wasn't a bad party for being in Brooklyn.
"My cousin Jose," Mariel explained.
"It's his party?" Eris still didn't understand why they were in a foreclosed house.
"You could say that. This is his side business, throwing parties in abandoned and foreclosed houses, then charging for entry. He actually makes decent money off it."
"Oh. Well, thank you for getting me in without paying," Eris said awkwardly. She hated being in anyone's debt, especially this girl's.
"Don't thank me too much," Mariel said. "Now you can't flirt with anyone here since I told Jose we're together."
"What?" Eris stared at her, even more confused.
"Sorry," Mariel said. "But he stopped letting me bring my friends for free because I abused it too much. Now he only comps whoever I'm hooking up with. I figured you're strapped for cash right now, so..."
She trailed off awkwardly.
"Thanks."
Eris had no idea what to make of that. She looked around. "Who are all these people?"
"Friends from school, from the neighborhood. You might know some of them, actually. A few of my altitude co-workers are here."
Mariel grinned wickedly. Eris looked around the room and realized that she did, in fact, recognize several people. Wasn't that tall brunette girl the bar instructor she'd flirted with all last summer?
"I need a drink," Eris announced, heading for the bar as Mariel laughed behind her.
The night wore on. Eris introduced herself to almost everyone. They were all perfectly friendly and all seemed to know Mariel, as if Mariel were the social glue holding this group together. But something ineffable kept Eris separated from them, with their easy laughter and high energy. Maybe it was the hot coal of resentment still burning in her chest, or maybe it was just that she came from Uptower. But whatever it was, Eris felt somehow apart from them all. She kept drinking, hoping the alcohol would close the distance between them. Kept drinking until she too could laugh easily, dance carelessly. It felt good, floating around this abandoned house without caring what any of them thought of her. She had needed a night like this. At some point, she discovered the stairs to the roof. This house was so low to the ground, only 4 floors up. No one in the tower would consider this a view at all. Eris leaned against the low, protective wall, looking at the dark forms of the surrounding buildings. Light fell in golden rings on the street below. She could see straight into another house's living room, where a couple was seated at a tiny table, holding hands over their food. Eris looked quickly away, feeling somehow invasive. Across the water loomed the massive hulk of the tower. She let her eyes skim up, 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 wondering which of the tiny twinkling lights, which little slice of the sky, was her old apartment up on 985. Forget them, she told herself, the resentment still warming her from within. They had all treated her terribly, her mom, her dad, even her birth dad, whoever he was. She didn't need any of them.
She didn't need anyone at all. She was doing just fine without them.
Eris tipped her head all the way back, even higher than the tower, to look up at the dark expanse of night sky. She remembered all the nights she'd snuck into Greenwich Park hand in hand with whomever she was dating at the time, to look up at the vast hollow screen of stars. No matter how good hollow technology got, it would never come close to this.
There you are!
Mariel appeared at the top of the stairs. Snippets of the music drifted through the doorway with her.
I'm heading out if you want to come.
I don't want to leave yet. Eris was still looking up at the stars.
Really? You're going to take the monorail alone later tonight?
Mariel teased.
Fine.
She heaved a dramatic sigh and turned around, stumbling a little.
Hey there.
Mariel reached forward to steady Eris, who was swaying in her wedges.
Drinking yourself stupid won't make it better. Trust me, I've tried,
she said, surprisingly earnest.
Whatever.
Eris wasn't really listening. She was studying the sooty thickness of Mariel's lashes, the bright red cherry of her lips, the soft curve of her neck. She wanted to trace it, so she reached out and did just that. Mariel stood there, utterly motionless. Eris leaned in to kiss her. She tasted exactly like Eris had thought she would, like smoke and rum and waxy paint stick. Eris kept a hand lightly on Mariel's neck, enjoying the feeling of her pulse skipping erratically, and reached the other around her head. Mariel broke away and took a step back.
Eris, what are you—
Never mind, you're drunk, she said, stating the obvious. You need to get home.
That's right, let's go home.
Eris started to pull Mariel down the stairs, but Mariel dug her heels in.
Eris! Come on! I want to see all your ink tats!
She teased mercilessly, though she wouldn't have really cared if Mariel pushed her away. She was past caring about anything. Still, this was fun. The teasing and the flush on Mariel's cheeks and the stolen kiss. Eris loved these games. She was good at them.
Play to your strengths, her dad used to say.
She'd always assumed he was talking about her beauty. Everyone knew that was her greatest strength. No, she shouldn't be thinking about her dad anymore.
Well, okay, Mariel said and laughed. Let's go. You are my date, after all.
Eris nodded, feeling reckless, not caring about anything but this moment. Eris's head was pounding. She started to reach for the sheets she'd kicked down near her feet, and froze, blinking into the unfamiliar darkness. The bright pink contacts clock at the corner of her vision told her it was 4:09 a.m. Next to her was the sound of quiet, steady breathing. Slowly, carefully, Eris turned. Mariel lay sprawled alongside her, her dark hair spilling out over the flat white pillow. Shit, shit, shit. Eris stayed utterly still, practically holding her breath as she pieced together the events of the night before. She remembered taking all those shots of cheap liquor at the party, kissing Mariel on the roof, then heading out together into the warm summer night to come back here, to Mariel's room. Mariel shifted in her sleep, and Eris's heart lurched in sudden panic. She needed to leave. Moving as hurriedly as she dared, she slid out of the bed and hunted for her clothes, which were strewn all over the floor. Buttoning her jeans with one hand and holding her wedges in the other, she walked barefoot out of Mariel's room. Eris hesitated a moment in the hallway of their apartment, disoriented. She hadn't been paying attention when they stumbled inside a few hours ago. But then she heard muffled footsteps and a low voice, and she jumped to action. She could not be confronted by Mariel's parents right now. In a sheer panic, she grabbed what looked like the front door and escaped into the cheap fluorescent lighting of Bainbury Lane. Seconds later, Eris had slunk the three doors back to her apartment and was safe in her room. She didn't even bother changing into pajamas, just curled up in her bed and squeezed her eyes shut. God, she missed their old apartment. She missed her old bed, with its soft, rounded edges and aromatherapy pillows and her expensive dream weaver. Tonight had been a mistake. Eris blamed all the shots she'd taken and her bizarre mood. Thank God she'd at least woken up when she did and saved herself the